man's worth can be judged by the caliber of his enemies. A man's worth can be judged by the caliber of his enemies. Burton Groza had encountered the phrase in a pocket-sized biography purchased at a newsstand just before the train left the station. A man's worth can be judged by the caliber of his enemies. Burton Groza stared reflectively from the murky compartment window. Darkness silvered the glass and gave him nothing to look at but his own image. How many people ran him into that face? The eyes narrowed by a myopic squint, denied by vanity, the correction of spectacles. Of the nose, he secretly called patrician. Of the mouth, that was hard, unrelenting, cruel even. How many enemies have I got? How many? Oh, I've got a lot of enemies. I'm rich in enemies. Some of them are 24 carat.
This is the story of a man with enemies. This is a tale of a man with foes. This is a story of Burton Groza,
who collects opponents like spent matches wherever he goes.
Beyond Midnight by Michael McCabe.
Like Whitman Hayes, for instance. Whitman Hayes. I'm proud of him. Proud.
Are you, Burton, dear?
Do you think it odd that a man like me should be proud of an enemy?
Not odd, Burton, dear. No, not odd.
What, then?
Well, I don't quite know, dear. Mr. Hayes came up from nothing. He's had a very hard life. But mind you, Burton, dear, I'm very proud that you've done far better than he has and will do far greater things. He is, after all, twice your age.
Yes. Mm.
He must be nearly 70 now, Mr. Hayes.
That's what he is. I'm 35. You were right when you said twice as old. Hayes knows the food business, all right. Knows it from every angle. A wagon jobber for 6 years, a broker for 10. He was a food company executive for nearly 20 years before the old man brought him into the organization to sit on his right hand. Pinning Hayes to the mat isn't easy, but it makes doing it even sweeter.
Won't he retire soon, Burton, dear?
Hayes. The Whitman Hayes of this world don't retire. They're carried out of a boardroom one day in a box.
Oh, Burton, really?
He's senile. Trouble is, he doesn't know it. He's outlived his usefulness. That's what I trade on. That's what I trade on, and that you have to do in business. I concentrate my questions on the new supermarket and suburbia phenomena to demonstrate to the old man that times have changed, that the past is dead, and that new merchandising tactics are required, and that only a younger man can supply them. Is there mail for me, Jean?
Yes, Burton, dear. There are a few letters. They're on the hall table.
Don't put my mail on the hall table, Jean. I told you before, this isn't a boarding house.
No, dear. I wonder if you'd like to go to the cinema tonight.
I'm going to have a bath. I'll see to the mail, too, at the same time. I'll have dinner, then.
Would you like to go to the cinema tonight, Burton?
What is it?
Love in the Afternoon with Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
Well, there's a war film on at the Odeon about...
Yeah.
About the first men to go into the concentration camps after the war. But Burton...
We'll go to that.
Always war and violence and... My own fault, though. I shouldn't have mentioned the other one.
I don't want to be disturbed, Jean.
All right, Burton, dear. We would have stayed at home if I'd only said love in the afternoon. Audrey Hepburn's so lovely, too. I'll go in the week on my own.
Jean. Society for United Action. What might that be when it's at home? Dear Mr. Grunzer, your name has been suggested to us.
Suggested to us by a mutual acquaintance. Our organization has an unusual mission which cannot be described in this letter, but which you may find of exceeding interest. We would be gratified by a private discussion at your earliest convenience. If I do not hear from you to the contrary in the next few days, I will take the liberty of calling you at your office. Carl Tucker, Secretary.
His first reaction was defensive. He suspected an oblique attack on his pocketbook. His second was curiosity. He went into the bedroom and looked up Society for United Action. It wasn't there. All the same, he said to himself,
"Okay, Mr. Tucker, I'll bite."
I assume you don't mind me calling today.
Carl Tucker. Oh, yes. Yes, I received a letter from you.
It's 3 o'clock now. Is it convenient to talk with you?
When you said, yes, in your letter, you said call me. I presumed it was meant in the American sense. Call on the telephone.
Is there a chance that we can talk now, or would it be more convenient?
Yes, yes. Well, that is, if you could give me some idea.
We're not a charity organization, Mr. Grunther, in case you thought I was after money. We don't sell anything either. We're more or less a voluntary service group. Our membership is over 1,000 at present.
To tell you the truth, I've never heard of you.
No, you haven't, and that's one of the assets. May I
please,
won't
you? Take a seat.
Thank you. I think you'll understand, though, when I tell you about it. I'm a semi-retired broker, so I'm not here to sell you razor blades. I couldn't if I tried anyway. The subject I want to discuss is rather intimate, so I'll have to ask you to bear with me on a certain point. Could anyone overhear us at all, do you think?
No. No one?
Good. The point is, what I want to say is in the strictest confidence. If you betray this confidence, if you publicize our society in any way, the consequences could be most unpleasant.
Well, right. Yeah, yes.
Good. Now, the society has prepared this little spiel about our basic philosophy. But I'm not going to bore you with it. I'm going to go straight to the heart of our argument. You may not agree with our first principle at all, and I'd like to know that now.
First principle?
Well, put in the crudest form, Mr. Grunther, the Society for United Action believes that some people are just not fit to live. There, I said it. Some of our members don't believe in my direct approach. They feel the argument ought to be broached more discreetly. But, frankly, I've obtained rather excellent results in this rather crude manner. How do you feel about what I've said, Mr. Grunzer?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it.
Were you in the war, Mr. Grunzer?
Yes, in the Navy. I don't suppose I thought the enemy fit to live at the time. I suppose there are plenty of other cases, too, now you've come to mention it. It's just that I've never given it any thought. Yes, I suppose murderers, these crimes in the papers involving children, perverts, people like that, I suppose they're not fit to live.
Ah, So, you accept our first principle. It's a question of category, isn't it?
I suppose you could say that.
Good. Now I'll try another blunt question. Have you personally ever wished someone dead? Oh, I don't mean those casual, fleeting wishes everybody has. I mean a real, deep down, uncomplicated wish for the death of someone you think unfit to live. Have you?
And another thing, Johnson. Stop trying to influence young Eckert. Stop trying to corrupt him. Yes, I said corrupt, but I mean corrupt. Eckert's a decent young man. He'll not stoop to your kind of business dealings. He's going to make a very fine manager of bakery products, if you leave him alone. I've watched your face, Grunzer. I know your mind. I know what you're thinking. I know you hate me. Well, I don't care. You're worthless, Mr. Grunzer. A blot upon the earth. A scheming nasty. And sue me for slander if you wish. But I will say it. An evil man.
Have you, Mr. Grunzer?
Yes. Yes, I've wished for the death of someone I think unfit to live. Certainly I have. Cancel my appointments for the rest of the afternoon. It doesn't matter. Well,
young woman, who is employing whom? Do as I say.
Who is employing whom? I often think, Tucker, I often think we in business would have a much easier time if that axiom were observed. Who is employing...
Quite. So, there are times when the removal of someone from this earth would be beneficial.
This isn't Murder Incorporated, is it?
Hardly, Mr. Grunzer, hardly. There is absolutely no criminal aspect in our aims or our methods. I'll admit we're a secret society, but we're not exactly the Black Hand. No, you'd be amazed at the quality of our membership. It even includes members of the legal profession. No, I don't know, thank you. Yes, members of the legal profession. But let me tell you how the society came to be. It began with two men. I can't reveal their names just now. The year was 1949, and one of these men was a lawyer. The other one was a government psychiatrist. Both of them were involved in a rather sensational trial concerning a man accused of a hideous crime against two small boys. In their opinion, the man was unquestionably guilty, but an unusually persuasive defense counsel and a highly suggestible jury gave him his freedom. When the shocking verdict was announced, these two, who were personal friends as well as colleagues, were thunderstruck and furious. They felt a monumental wrong had been committed, and they were helpless to right it.
I see. The psychiatrist.
Yes. For some years, he'd made studies in a field which might be called anthropological psychiatry. One of these researches related to the voodoo practice of certain groups, the Haitian in particular. You've probably heard a great deal about voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Obaya, as they call it in Jamaica. Anyway, I won't dwell on the subject unless you think we hold tribal rites and stick needles into dolls or something. The chief feature of his study, this psychiatrist, was the uncanny success of certain strange practices. Naturally, he, as a scientist you know, naturally he rejected the supernatural explanation and sought a rational one. And, of course, there was only one answer. When the high priest, or whatever, decreed punishment or death for someone, it was the guilty person's own convictions concerning the power of the death wish, his own faith in the voodoo power. This made the wish come true. Sometimes he would simply sicken and die. Sometimes, through the voodoo curse, he would die by accident. An accident prompted by the secret belief that once cursed, he must die. Eerie, isn't it?
No doubt.
Anyway, our friend, Lisa Carteris, began to wonder, you see, if any of us have progressed far enough along the path of civilization not to be suggestible to this kind of punishment. He proposed that they experiment on this subject just to find out.
What? You mean they actually,
They went to see this man, you see, and they announced their intentions. They told him they were going to wish him death. They explained how and why their wish would become a reality. And although he laughed at them, they saw superstition, fear in his face.
This was the man, the one responsible for the crime.
That's right. That's right. They promised him that regularly, every day, they would be wishing for his death until he could no longer stop the mystic juggernaut that would make the wish come true.
Pretty silly, really, isn't it?
The man died of a heart attack 2 months later.
Ah! I knew you'd say that. Such a thing as coincidence, you know.
Naturally. That's what our friends told one another. They weren't satisfied, you see, so they tried again.
Again?
I won't recount who the victim was, but this time they engaged the help of four associates. This little band of pioneers was the nucleus of the society I represent today.
And you mean to tell me there's 1,000, huh?
Yes, 1,000. And more. All over the country. A society whose one function is to wish people dead. At first, of course, membership was purely voluntary. But now we've got a system. Each new member of the Society for United Action joins on the basis of submitting one potential victim. Naturally, the Society investigates to determine whether the victim is deserving of his fate. If the case is a good one, the entire membership then sets about to wish him dead. the task has been... I'm sorry? Once the person has met his decreed fate, well, then the new member must take part in all future concerted action. That and a small yearly fee is all that's required for membership. And in case you don't think I'm serious, here are the facts. To date, 229 victims were named by our selection committee. Of those, 201 are no longer alive. Coincidence, Mr. Grunter?
Well, that leaves...
28. Well, this indicates that our method isn't infallible, doesn't it? We're the first to admit that. But new techniques are being developed all the time. I assure you, in the end, we shall get them all. Yes, our members are listed in this book, Mr. Grunter. I'm going to give you the option to call 1, 10, or 100 of them. Call them? Call them and see if I'm telling the truth. Well, what to call? Any of them?
No. I'm willing to take your word for it, Mr. Tucker. It's incredible, but I can see just how it works. I really can. Just knowing that 1,000 people wish you dead is enough to... there's just one question. You mentioned something about a small fee.
It's £50, Mr. Grunter.
£50? I see. 50 times 1,000. That works out to very reasonable money, doesn't it?
I assure you, the organization is not motivated by profit. And not the kind you mean. The dues merely cover expenses, committee work, research, and the like. Surely you can understand that?
Yes, I suppose so.
Then you find it interesting?
Interesting.
Can you, offhand, think of anyone you would wish...
I think I could.
I'll hound you from the company, Grunter. You and all your psychopathic creeps.
If I put my mind to it.
I've striven hard, man and boy. Given the best years of my life to this organization. I love my work. And I'll not see an overambitious jacked-up pipsqueak take over. You will not step into my shoes. And from my shoes will not influence D.B. Stevens. This firm will not become secondary to the whim of a thug like you. I dedicate my life to breaking you, Burton Grunzer.
If only it could work.
But it does work, Mr. Grunzer. I would have thought that 201 out of 229.
Yes, but...
200 and...
Can it work, though? Wishes became deeds. I'd have slaughtered dozens in my lifetime.
No doubt you would, Mr. Grunzer. No doubt you would have. But you weren't aware of my organization then, were you?
No, but... Yes, I suppose it was always different. My wishes then were always secret things, hidden. No man ever knew about them.
And Burton Grunzer strode about the room. He thought swiftly and concisely about the information, the knowledge this amiable little man, Mr. Tucker, had brought him, the power Mr. Tucker was placing within his grasp. 201 out of 229. Very good odds. What was that? 85%? 90? Something very like it.
I assure you, in the end, we shall get them all.
Yes. Yes, I can see how it would work. 1,000 minds burning with a single wish of death. I can imagine, I can see the chosen victim. Sneering in disbelief at first, and then slowly, gradually, giving in, succumbing to fear.
You put it very well, Mr. Grunzer. You have a wonderful grasp of what we're aiming for.
At first, of course, the victim would just think that, well, that it might work. And then...
Suddenly, Burton Grunzer saw the ruddy face of Whitman Hayes.
But the victim has to know all this, of course. He has to know the society exists and has succeeded and is wishing for his death. That's absolutely essential, isn't it?
Absolutely essential. Sir, you've touched on the vital point, Mr. Grunzer. The victim must be informed. And that... precisely, is what I have done. Your death wish began at noon today. The society has begun to work. I'm very sorry.
Goodbye, Mr. Grunzer.
The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.